Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We're on the edge of deflation. Once you get into deflation, you almost never get out. That's what the Great Depression taught us. That's what Japan taught us.
Senator Charles Schumer discussing the need for a stimulus package and mentioning a word that we've been hearing about more and more in the news recently, deflation. There were two headlines today in the Wall Street Journal that had me scratching my head. You might have seen them. They're on the front page of the money and investing section. One, above the fold, said, data expected to confirm deflation trend. And the article goes on to explain why economists think deflation is a troubling situation. Our next guest will help explain as well. But below the fold, there was this headline, dollar appears safe for now as inflation concerns fade. Wait a minute. Those worries about rampant inflation are diminishing because of deflation. So doesn't that make deflation a good thing? Okay, here to explain the cross currents that are emerging in our economy is Peter Coy, economic editor at Businessweek magazine. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks very much.
Help me out here, Peter. So we all know inflation is bad. It ultimately erodes the value of the dollar, which is good if you're an American exporter or a European shopper on vacation in New York City, but bad if you're trying to balance your budget. So what is deflation and why should it be feared?
First of all, deflation is defined as a general decline in the price level over an extended period of time. And it can be a very bad thing. We're not in that situation yet. In fact, the fact that consumer prices fell 1% in, I guess it was October, was a good thing on the whole, because the biggest reason for it was the decline in gasoline prices, which is almost an unalloyed good thing. Most of that is coming from oil that's imported, and so more money is staying in consumers' wallets than they can use it to spend on other things.
That's good, yes.
So far, so good,
So far, so good. I'm liking this. Go on.
The concern, and another example of a positive deflation would be the fall in prices of consumer electronics. Because there, it's coming about because of Moore's Law, you know, how chips get faster and cheaper every year. And so you have higher productivity and prices fall because the costs fall. That's a good thing. As long as the producers can still, you know, make money, why not cut the price? The risk is that you start getting into a slack economy, underemployed resources, that's both capital and labor, and workers and companies have to cut their prices. Workers get less money, companies charge lower prices. And this can start to spiral downward and end up in making matters even worse, where the economy goes from a recession into a depression. And that's what we're eagerly, desperately trying to avoid now.
The Wall Street Journal says real spending has been dropping even as prices have declined. We're seeing that in the stores. Retailers are slashing their prices, but shoppers aren't biting. Why?
I think a lot of it is fear. Part of it's fear, and part of it is the
fear
lack
of what?
Of
saving money?
Yeah, right. Fear that they're going to lose their jobs and that their debts will become unsupportable. And let me just focus on the debt problem, because credit is less available, of course. And even if you don't need a loan right now, the fact that you might need one and you might not be able to get one can be just enough to scare people. The personal savings rate, which was hovering around zero or even negative territory for a few years there, is ramping back up. It's over 2% now, which is not exactly an impressive number,
right?
But it's a pretty dramatic change.
We'd like to hear from you. What are your questions about deflation, inflation, and the Fed's latest move yesterday on consumer loans? Peter Coy, economic editor of Businessweek, is my guest. He's got the answers. Give us a call at 212-433-9692. I'm putting a lot on your shoulders, Peter. 212-433-WNYC. You talk about fear. I've read other things that people are waiting for the prices to fall even lower, saying, well, if I can get you know, the price of a car dropped 20%. I should just wait this out. Maybe it'll drop another 10%. But I don't buy that as much as I buy this idea that the insecurity that we're talking about is the insecurity that individuals have about their economic well-being, the value of their homes, the value of their 401ks, their own personal wealth is eroding. They're worried about their jobs.
Right.
So with the federal bailout move that happened yesterday, how does that shore up individuals' consumer confidence?
Most people are probably not taking that into close account when they decide, you know, what to do on Friday after Thanksgiving. But the way it affects it is really on more of a macroeconomic scale, because what we want to do is prevent the financial system from freezing up. It already has. Of course, big parts of it have frozen up. So those need to be thawed, and the other parts need to be sustained. The worst thing for a borrower about deflation is that the bank doesn't reduce how much you owe when there's deflation, and yet your ability to pay goes down because, say, your salary is falling. Mm. So the debt looms larger and larger as the years go by. In ordinary times, when there's positive inflation, the debt shrinks, right? Because, you know, you owe 5% on your money, and 2% inflation is really only 3%. Now, the problem the Federal Reserve has now is it's already cut the federal funds rate to 1%, and it can't cut too much farther. So it's hard for the Fed to engineer that kind of target, which is to keep in a recession. What you want to do is you want to have your interest rate be below the rate of inflation, actually. Making it very easy and very attractive for people to borrow. How can you do that if inflation is negative? You can't have a negative interest rate. So what they need to do is find a way to get – they're actually trying to engender a little bit of inflation here, believe it or not.
Dina from Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning. Hello, Dina.
Hello?
Hi, Dina. You're on WNYC. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yes, I'm a small business owner, and for some reason, I've been invited by banks to at a 0% for 18 months to have these lines of credit. I didn't ask for it. They just sent me out credit card companies, and I really don't need the money now, but who knows what's going to happen over the next year and a half. And I was wondering if you thought I should still, being at 0% for 18 months, I was thinking maybe $20,000, if you think I should take that out now, being, you know, the climate the way it is, or do you think I should just, you know, just wait to see, maybe there'll be another offer down the road?
Thanks, Dina, for your call. Dina, exemplifying people sitting at that crux, right, that the concern, what's going to happen down the road? Do I make a move? And clearly with this latest report on the Commerce Department about spending dropping in October, a lot of people are just deciding to stay put. What's your advice, Peter Coy?
Yeah, not exactly my area of expertise, but what I can say is that the treasurer of General Motors would love to trade places with Dina.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, that's a very attractive offer, and, you know, why not take it? Having that breathing room can't be a bad thing.
So what causes deflation, the real economy or consumers? And if it's consumers, why not do more to help them? More unemployment benefits, a freeze on foreclosures, a ceiling or a basement for home values, the federal government backing my loans so I go out and borrow more.
Right. That's what the I think the Obama administration is going to be moving toward, more direct aid to consumers. Well, actually, some of that is in the plans of the Federal Reserve and the Treasury yesterday, this $800 billion plan. $200 billion of the money is going to go towards, lending money to holders of securities that are backed by credit card loans, auto loans, student loans, small business loans. And $600 billion is going to support the housing market, the mortgage financing giants, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Federal Home Loan Banks.
But again, that's not really helping me directly. That's helping the investors in the securities that loan backs.
It doesn't help you directly, but it helps you almost directly because you saw what happened yesterday. Mortgage rates tumbled. because suddenly the people who finance mortgages can get money more cheaply, and their finances have improved. So you may call it a trickle-down, but it's a pretty direct trickle-down that is actually going to help the economy.
Nick from Cliffside Park, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning. I'm still not sold. I see deflation as a good thing for people who actually consume and you know, pay for stuff with cash. I think that the financial, quote, industry and people who lived high on the hog on borrowed money are finally being hit with, you know, with what they should have been hit with years and years ago. And the more we bail out, the more we prop up a system which is based on toxic growth and essentially dishonest theft at the moral level, moral hazard, sooner or later, it's all going to hit the fan. We can put it off for 6 months or a year or 2 years. Eventually, all these trillions of dollars we're borrowing are going to have to be paid back. And the mess is going to come sooner or later. How much better it would be to deal with it now at the root level and allow the so-called financial service industry to be just what it is, a lubricant for the real economy. We're allowing the five quarts of oil in the machine to become more valuable than the machine itself.
Good point, Nick. Thank you for your call. Peter Coy, you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, a lot of points there. The big point about deflation is that it makes debt more burdensome. So it's bad for debtors and overall good for creditors. Inflation is the opposite. It erodes the value of debt, so it's good for debtors and bad for creditors. So it kind of depends where you fit on that spectrum. Now, overall, high inflation is bad for everybody, and so is a lot of deflation. What we would like to engineer and what the Fed aims for is to get a nice 1-2% annual rate of inflation just to be those quarts of oil that the caller is talking about.
Jim from the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. I had a question about what in general, it might be a naive question, but to me it seems like there's a lot of pressure being put on the government, which I think is a good thing. However, I also was wondering if there's something that, like, the average American should be doing to help stimulate the economy, or, you know, what are the good areas to consume in order to help, you know, the economy do better?
To do your part. Jim, thank you. You're not the only person asking that question. People have posted the comment to our website, WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show if you want to post your comment. Peter Coy, any particular way that people can help?
I think that's kind of a charming question because, you know, you obviously a selfless set of listeners in WNYC who are, at a time like this, thinking about how they can help the U.S. economy. You know, really, I don't think any individual obviously can make much difference in a $14 trillion economy. But if there were anything, it would be stuff like, if you have the wherewithal to spend, you know, this is maybe not the time to be retreating into a shell. There are times when saving is very necessary, but ironically, the paradox of thrift says that while thrift is a personal virtue, when it comes to the economy as a whole, too much thrift is a negative thing. That was what John Maynard Keynes pointed out about the Depression. So it fits in with our deflation discussion. This is not the time, you know, to get religion about how you need to build up your savings, assuming that you already are doing a decent amount.
A quick question. The Fed's approach has been likened to the one employed by Japan in 2001 to combat years of stagnant growth in that country. What's happened to Japan?
So Japan had an enormous property bubble through the 1980s, and you may remember the statistic that the grounds of the palace were in Tokyo were more valuable than all the real estate in California.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
oh, my
it was
goodness.
Preposterous. And, you know, they were using their money to buy up, you know, Pebble Beach Golf Course and Rockefeller Center and so on.
Right.
And then it was clearly overdone. And then they had a crash in property values. And, you know, sounds familiar, right?
Right.
So it dragged on, and there's the primary school of thought says that Japan did a bad job of getting out of it. Richard Koo, though, of Nomura Securities, has an interesting perspective, which says things were had to be really bad whenever you had a crash of that magnitude. And the Bank of Japan, the Ministry of Finance, at least managed to keep the Japanese from being out on the street. They managed to engineer a long period of sluggishness. Now, what the concern
is that
the US,
is that what we're doing?
Oh, okay. Hey, that's a good question. Is that what we're doing? There's still a lot of optimism that by acting very aggressively now, by kind of cramming into 1 year the stuff that the Japanese did over a decade or more, that we'll be able to quickly, you know, right things, get out of this deflation, get back into reasonable growth, and put this episode behind us. But there's also this thought that, hey, we're propping up AIG, we're propping up Citigroup and so on. This is the sort of stuff that we used to criticize the Japanese for, you know, throwing money at zombies. And yet we see why we're doing it, because these companies are just too big to fail. So we are not that different from the Japanese after all, and maybe we will be in for a long period of sluggishness.
Oh, my. All right. One last call. Steve from Stony Brook, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking. So front page of the New York, very quickly, the Fed is going to basically print $800 billion worth of money and inject it into the economy. Wouldn't that, by definition, counter deflationary pressure? Because it would thereby make the dollar less valuable relative to other currencies. And furthermore, couldn't that also be back calculable to see what the effects are going to be relative to other currencies? It would make the dollar cheaper and therefore exports or United States exports more attractive to foreign buyers. So isn't that a very effective way of fundamentally stimulating the economy?
Thanks a lot, Steve. Peter Coy?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. The one flaw in the logic is that it assumes that money is actually going to go into circulation. And the evidence is that it may not. Already, the banks of the United States have been stashing more and more of their money in accounts at the Federal Reserve rather than lending it out. And that's actually a big part of the problem here that the Fed is trying to address. It figures if it does even more money printing, that eventually it'll just overwhelm the reluctance of the banks and they will lend more. But you cannot assume that all that $800 billion is going to wind up circulating through the economy.
Peter Coy is the economic editor of Business Week magazine. Thanks so much for joining us this morning and helping us to explain the ins and outs of deflation and inflation.
Thanks a lot.
And we're taking your comments. The conversation continues online, WNYC.org. Click on The Brian Lehrer Show. Just ahead, when is a film just a film, and when is it a tool for social change? We talk about the movie Milk, which opens today.